Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. For a year, Israel has been committing genocide against the Palestinians. This would not be possible without the backing of the West, particularly the material support of the United States. The West is at war with humanity. Crosstalking Israel's wars, I'm joined by my guest, Daniel Levy, in London. He is the president of the U.S. Middle East Project. Also in London, we have Ahmed Alno. He is director of We Are Not Numbers. And in Raleigh, we cross to Ray McGovern. He is a former CIA analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Gentlemen, I'm calling this program Genocide as a Strategy, because that's what I see that has unfolded over the last 12 months. Daniel, if I can go to you first here. A year on, how should we think about this conflict, what it means for Israel, the Palestinians, West Asia, the greater Middle East, if you will, and the world? Because the Western world gets atrocity propaganda nonstop. There are a number of individuals, like the Gray Zone and others, that have debunked it quite efficiently. But for the most part, the Western world believes in atrocity propaganda, and it doesn't give them a clear view of what's actually happening. Go ahead, Daniel.
So there are different ways of looking at this, of course, but one of those is this is not something that should hugely surprise people on the Palestinian front who have been paying attention to the direction of travel of the political scene in Israel and the emergence of a new elite who really wear their intentionality with regard to the Palestinians on their sleeve. By saying that, I don't want to suggest that there was a golden era of peacemakers in charge in Israel, and now we've moved on to the Netanyahu, Ben Gvir, Smotrich crew. But there was a degree of some pragmatism and some sense that you had to at least go with the make-believe of a peace process. This Israeli leadership is looking to this opportunity to make the Palestinian territories uninhabitable for Palestinians. Okay. And given that the guidelines of this government are that the Jewish people have an exclusive right to all parts of the land of Israel, it shouldn't surprise us. Now, I think we're in a slightly different phase because the leadership have looked at their inability, actually, to secure this total victory or to restore Israeli deterrence or to destroy or to restore, rather, the myth of Israel's power posture in Gaza. And they've decided to try and pursue that elsewhere. They clearly infiltrated Hezbollah's communication system. They saw an opportunity there. And off the back of that, I think we're back in a space where myths of remaking the Middle East, which are not new to an Israeli-American schema, are coming to the forefront. In the meantime, you have a West which is either looking at this and saying, look, maybe we don't like everything Israel's doing, but there are our guys, there are our allies, and we have to stand behind them. Or perhaps there's more to it than that, and they see geostrategic advantage in some of what's going on, and it can be a combination of both those things.
I agree with you. It's a combination of both, but and there's intentionality in different in both parts of that argument there. Ahmed, you know, words really count. I was trained as an academic historian, and I'm fascinated in how people phrase things, the lexicon of genocide. You know, we always, you know, they claim Israel's indiscriminately firing on civilians. No, it's very discriminate. They know exactly what they're doing. In the case of Gaza, I don't think they're particularly concerned about Hamas. They want to kill Palestinians. And they keep saying, well, we were targeting Hamas. But in fact, it's just a way to kill civilians. It's just under the cover of, you know, or this is targeted, it's very specific. That's rubbish. That doesn't make any sense at all. And so this is a war of annihilation. This is a genocide that is spreading. Go ahead, in London.
Of course it is a war against all the Palestinian people. It is the same war that they started 76 years ago against the Palestinian people when they ethnically cleansed the Palestinians from their homes and lands to make way to the establishment of the State of Israel. It has been happening over 76 years, years from now, and it is only continuing. And in the beginning of this genocide, people said that this is a war against Hamas, and I'm sick and tired of explaining to them again and over that this is not a war against Hamas. This is not a war against the Palestinian military or the Palestinians' political parties. This is a war against all the Palestinian people, every single one of them. And that's why we see that the vast majority of the casualties in Gaza are women and children. Now, I happened to lose all my family members in Gaza at the beginning of this genocide when they were sleeping in their home, 21 members of my family were slaughtered while they were sleeping in their home, and there were no militants around the area. There was no justification whatsoever to the targeting of my home in Gaza. What happened to my family home happened to thousands and thousands of Palestinian families. We're talking about thousands of other families who were wiped out from the civil registry, and it has been going on. The scary part is that until now, we here in the West still discussing if this is a war against Hamas or against the Palestinian people. And I believe this is absurd. We are way beyond that. This is a war against the Palestinian people, all the Palestinian people. The main purpose of this war is to ethnically cleanse the Palestinians from Gaza, as they did 76 years ago. And it will not finish at Gaza. They will go to the West Bank after they're done with Gaza. They will go to Lebanon. And today we have been hearing some words from Smotrich, the Israeli finance minister, who's saying that he wants the greater Israel a plan to be implemented, which means they want lands from Lebanon, from Syria, from Jordan, from Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Egypt.
Yeah, well, so, Ray, if that's what we're going to be, greater Israel, as Ahmed just mentioned here, that can only be done with the backing of the United States. Full stop.
That's correct. And, you know, the sorrowful part of all this is that the polls show that the majority of Israeli citizens support the extermination, the genocide against Palestinians. The question is, will Smotrich, will Ben-Gvir, will Netanyahu get away with it? I believe that Netanyahu has bitten off more than he can chew. And right now we have a really interesting pas de deux here. We have Gallant, the defense minister, supposed to have been visiting Washington yesterday, and Netanyahu said, no, don't go, because I want to talk to Biden first. Now, that happened yesterday. What did Biden tell Netanyahu? I believe that there's precedent for thinking that the U.S. military finally stood up and said to the president, look, for God's sake, we're not prepared to get into a wider war in the Middle East. So for God's sake, calm them down, tell them not to retaliate against Iran in such a way that they'll be involved in this wider war and you will be sucked in, Mr. President. Don't do it. Has the military succeeded in making that kind of approach? Yes, they have. It was 3 weeks ago that they did that on Ukraine. So I have some hope now that was lacking 2 days ago, that finally the military is beginning to compare notes with the Israeli military, which also doesn't want to be overextended. And maybe this thing is going to wind down after the election here in the United States.
Well, Peter, can I jump in here?
Go right ahead, because I think if a conflict starts, the United States will have no choice. I'm sorry, go ahead, Daniel.
Well, I found what Ray just said fascinating in terms of also where there is real questioning of the utility and the serving of national interest and overreach that crosses parts of the U.S. military and the Israeli military. And I think it's important to lay down a marker on something, because it is true that there is broad Israeli public support for the action in Gaza off the back of what happened to Israelis on October the 7th. And it's true that the intentionality of the current Israeli leadership goes well beyond reasserting deterrence or security or even revenge specifically for October 7th. It's a much longer held position vis-a-vis Palestinian life and well-being, and indeed a greater Israel vision. But, and this is important, that is not something shared by the entire Israeli population and not even shared by the entire Israeli body politic. And so to suggest that the going along with what's happening now means that all of the Israeli body politic or the Israeli public are going to go along with this more far-reaching permanent greater Israel displacement of every Palestinian, I think is a misreading of some important fault lines inside Israel. And it's important to get those things right. So I do not think there is a great Israeli depth of goodwill towards Palestinians. Don't get me wrong on that. But I think there are many Israelis inside and outside the system who look at this and say, we could here play into our own vulnerabilities and cause ourselves problems if we go too far.
Yeah, well, because Ahmed, this is, I mean, the reason why we're all focused on this issue, because it's very existential. It's existential for so many different peoples in the region. I mean, to be or not to be, and this is where we are. That is why it's so dangerous. Go ahead, Ahmed.
Yes, I agree with Daniel that maybe not all the Israeli components, society or politicians agree on the greater Israeli plan. And I totally agree with you. But unfortunately, we have seen some politician leaders who are in power in governments who are calling for the implementation of the Israeli bigger plan. And now what we have been witnessing in Gaza, what we have been seeing in Gaza is an actual plan for the Israelis to ethnically cleanse the people from Gaza. They started from the north, and now the north is being bombed again. They want to evacuate the north into the south, and then from the south into the Egyptian Sinai Peninsula. And this is not no secrets. We have been hearing leaders and some pundits who talked about this plan over and over. In the West Bank, we have seen that Israel over the last 30 years and more, they have been expanding their settlements in the West Bank. So it's clear that the Israelis do not want to have any prospect for a Palestinian state in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip.
Well, and Ahmed, and also, I mean, I don't see the Zionist project taking a break. I think the Zionist project sees this tragedy, this catastrophe, as an opportunity. And on that point, gentlemen, I'm going to ask Ray about that when we come back from our break. And after that break, we'll continue our discussion on the Middle East. Stay with RT.
What is Bharat? Is it a travel ad? Is it a Bollywood poster? Is it the deepest yoga center in the world? Or is it something deeper, more complex, multifaceted? Let's talk without cliches. Let's talk Bharat.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the Middle East 1 year after October 7th. Okay, Ray, for some reason, over the course of a year, you've given us a ray of hope here, okay? No pun on your name there. But, you know, it seems to me where we are right now, it's existential for all, as I said in the first part of the program. And, you know, you said, you know, maybe Lloyd Austin and some of the generals are saying, you know, this is a bridge too far. But Lindsey Graham and Tom Cotton and the political elite, the neocons and the liberal interventionists, they're saying, look, you know, Hamas is on its knees. Hezbollah has been broken. The Iranians without their surrogates are vulnerable, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, don't you see this mindset could also be the reverse, that this is a once in a generation attempt to rearrange the Middle East or the rebirth of the Middle East, as Condi Rice said in 2006?
Of course, it is an existential situation. The question is that the neocons are only part of the rulers of our country. They are facing opposition now from a very powerful force, and that is the U.S. military. Had we not the precedent of the military forcing Biden not to listen to Blinken, to overrule him, and to tell him, no, we're not going to allow these longer-range missiles to hit inside Russia proper, then I would not be optimistic at all. But that happened. And Netanyahu has to take that into account as well. Gallant is the defense minister. Who would he have been speaking to? Our defense secretary and the military. So what Netanyahu wanted to prevent was some sort of a corruption, as he would see it, of Gallant with our military saying, look, this is really stupid. Listen to your own military. Stop. Don't retaliate against Iran in thinking that you're going to get a wider war, because we're going to tell the president no wider war. And last time we intervened in the political sphere, we won. We beat Blinken. We may be able to beat him again. That's how I read this thing. And so it's been interesting to see. I don't know if Gallant is coming. There was some speculation he might be coming tomorrow. But in any case, Netanyahu has talked to Biden. And it really depends on what Biden told him. I think Biden may have told him what he's hearing from Austin, as well as what he's hearing from Netanyahu's lawyer, Blinken.
Well, Daniel, weigh in on that, because, you know, there's various news reports. Some of them are contradictory. But, I mean, the United States appears, at least to some reporting, that it would be involved in one form or another on a attack on Iran. They're talking about what the target should be, what should be off limits, what should be targeted. It's very mixed right here. But I mean, again, this is an opportunity that so many people, and the neocons as we call them, to have a showdown, to fix all things all at one time. I mean, I know it's very messianic, but that's how some people think here. Go ahead, Daniel.
Well, you just used a very important word, which is messianic. And this is where you have the alignment of a messianic trend in Israel. You know, it's a much more religious, fundamentalist, ideological leadership today. A messianic trend that has always been there amongst the dispensationalist evangelical community in the U.S., the biggest pro-Zionist lobby in the U.S., bigger than the Jewish lobby in that respect, that supports the everything Israel does. And then it's a different kind of messianism, but it's this wide-eyed, we can remake things that Ray was referring to, neoconservatives, people can look up Strategy for a Clean Break, a document written in 1996 by Richard Perle and other neocons for Netanyahu when he first came into government, the Condoleezza Rice iteration of that. And today, whether they were there a few months ago or not, I think there is a cohort within the U.S. administration and in the Israeli government who are saying, yes, this is the moment to reshape the region. Blinken, McGurk, Hochstein, and others. And I very much accord with the idea that in both camps, there are those, again, they've not, this isn't about, and Ahmed, you know, we've just got to be realistic, and it's painful to say, this isn't about preserving Palestinian life, but it is about not getting sucked into something where much more direct American equities could be at stake, where I think also on the Israeli side, this is an overreach that could generate an even greater degree of blowback. And so you are seeing this play out amongst the competing camps. And let's remember that on the Israeli side, you have 20% of the population who are Palestinian citizens of Israel. They're not part of this. You've got the ultra-Orthodox who don't serve in the military. And you have a cohort of people who are saying, what's happening to my pocket,
middle class living, cost of living standards, people who are emigrating out of Israel, people who are seeing the investments not coming in, people who have second passports, buying second homes. So this really comes to the heart of what Israel can achieve and what constitutes the kind of overreach which could lead Israel into a serious crash.
Yeah, but it's fascinating what you're saying, but, you know, and I hate the phrase, but it's so common, the day after in Gaza, that is a huge question mark. And if we knew something about that, then it would tell us about how the rest of the conflict in the region could spread here. Ahmed, I think it's really important to mention what has happened over the year, last year, to international law, to international humanitarian law. I mean, something that the West essentially invented after the Second World War, so it would never happen again. That has all come apart at the seams. Why should the West have any legitimacy on anything when it comes to human rights?
I really don't understand. The West are the ones who invented the international law and the international humanitarian law, and they invented the UN and all of these international courts, and then they themselves couldn't abide with what they have invented. Unfortunately, I am as a Palestinian, and I think so many people in the Middle East and even in the West now agree with me that this genocide has collapsed the notions and the principles that the West came up with, the equality and the human rights and the international law and the international humanitarian law. All of this, I don't really understand them, and I don't believe any Western leader when they come to the TV and preach to us about the international law, about the human rights, and about equality. Unfortunately, the West have determined that international law can only be applied when it is against their enemies, against their foes, against the Africa and thugs like Putin, you know, and the Middle East and the Muslims and the barbarics and the Arabs. When it comes to the European allies and the friends, international law will never be applied. And I think this genocide has revealed all of that. From now on, neither me nor my fellow Palestinians will ever put faith in the international law or in the UN institutions or the UN Security Council and all of these courts, unfortunately.
You know, Ray, will anyone ever be held account for what we see on live TV, on our phones, a streamed genocide? You can't say you didn't know about it. You can't use that as an excuse, okay? Will the people that are perpetrating it ever be held account? It's extremely well documented.
It is, but it's not in the New York Times very much, or the Washington Post, or the Wall Street Journal. Let me just say that we've reached a pass where if what you say is true, namely that the Israelis are convinced that they can mousetrap the U.S. into full-fledged support, we're in big trouble. I would have said that on the 1st of October or in the succeeding days when I fully expected Netanyahu to do what he said he was going to do. He didn't. And that's why I'm saying, look, there is a possibility here. Iran, China, Russia and China are supporting Iran. The BRICS meeting is coming up. I think they're restraining Iran. And I think, and I hope this is not wishful thinking, that our military are restraining Biden. We'll see soon enough whether I'm right. But there is this 10-day hiatus since that major Iranian strike, which probably did more damage than anyone is willing to admit. I'm really, really amused by the smoke and mirrors, you know? Well, apparently the Israelis are actually blowing smoke over the airfields that have been hit, so suddenly photography can't see it. So we don't know what's under that smoke. I dare say there may have been F-35s that were destroyed. The Israelis should have drawn a lesson from that. U.S. people probably have. I'm hopeful.
Well, I mean, Daniel, I mean, if we extrapolate from what you've said and what Ray just said here, how does Israel get out of this? I mean, it's done, not only does it not want a ceasefire, it kills off all the negotiators that could be involved in a ceasefire. What's the next step, particularly for Israel in this case? Go ahead, Daniel.
Yeah, nothing says I want a deal like killing the guy who you'd be doing the deal with.
Look, that there is a leadership in Israel. And again, I don't want to attribute to those waiting in the wings as an alternative leadership great hope, because sadly they have not shown themselves to be a worthy opposition or a profiling courage. But there is a leadership right now that I think we can say with a great degree of confidence will not be able to translate whatever battlefield successes they achieve into sustainable political wins.
Good.
Because they do not have a political vision for the region in which they live that is achievable in that region. Are there people in the Middle East region who would be really happy to see Hezbollah taken down, Iran too, to see the Syrian regime more directly targeted? Of course they are. Are they going to rally around a project by Israel when Israel is destroying not only the Palestinians, but a city that virtually every Arab elite person knows well personally, like Beirut? No, they will not, especially not when it's aligned with an American project. Again, we see the US so willing to tarnish whatever residual reputation it might have had. So absent a sustainable, achievable, realistic vision, Israel is digging itself deeper into a hole. And yeah, I'm here, someone who cares deeply about the future of the Palestinians and the region, but I also really care about Israeli Jews and them having a future.
Well, okay.
And what
they're
doing,
gentlemen,
is making that really hard.
We've run out of time. Daniel made me more depressed at the end. Okay, maybe we'll have to do another round.
All right.
Okay, all right. All right, gentlemen, fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in London and in Raleigh. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.